Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
So Stephen and I are here in the studio today to introduce a conversation that we are bringing to you that took place between our friend Audie Cornish, who you've heard on this show many times, and Shonda Rhimes,
yeah.
A prominent person of television, one might say.
Absolutely. List every show that Shonda Rhimes has ever done, Linda.
Well, you know, right now she has Grey's Anatomy and she has Scandal. She also
How to Get Away with Murder.
Well, How to Get Away with Murder.
She's more tangentially attached.
She's not the creator, but she is an EP of that show. She's also done some other ones and wrote Crossroads with Britney Spears. Absolutely true story.
Wow.
She's a really, really interesting lady. And she and Audie had this conversation for All Things Considered about or around her new book, which is called Year of Yes, which is a thing that she did that I actually talked to her about last fall, where she had decided to say yes for a year to all the things that were scary to her. So a certain amount of this conversation got played on the radio. But the great thing about a podcast is we got lots of extra space. And this was so interesting that we wanted you to be able to hear more of it. So stick around. We hope you enjoy it. And here it is, Audie Cornish and Shonda Rhimes. Shonda Rhimes, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, before we get started, I want to get to something you talk about in the book about doing interviews, which for a long time you're not a fan of. I don't know if that's changed.
It has changed a lot.
Okay.
But yeah, for a long time, it caused quite a bit of panic.
And you say that you used to give athlete talk to certain answers. What's athlete talk?
Athlete talk is that stuff you'd always hear a professional athlete give after any game or match or any sporting event, where they'd sort of say, you know, I'd love to play the game of basketball, or like all of their answers were just vague and sort of plastic.
Like, happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to be here. Love to play for the ball club. Happy to score points. But they never actually said anything of substance.
What kind of question merits that sort of answer?
Literally, you can answer almost any question with it. It's actually very useful when you're terrified and don't want to answer any questions or are afraid of saying the wrong thing or you're panicking. You know, I could, you know, you could say, like, I'm just glad to be writing television. I'm happy to be working for the network. I'm excited to be here. And you can answer almost anything with it because it's vague enough to sort of confuse people into sort of moving on.
And with this book, you know, you're writing about things that don't lend themselves to athlete talk, right? You're writing very personal things about how you feel about your weight, how you feel about parenting. What sparked this?
The actual year itself, or more than a year itself, happened because my oldest sister said to me, you never say yes to anything. And by that, she meant I never accept any invitations. I never go anywhere. I'd never do anything. All I did was go to work and come home. And she was right. My life had gotten really small. And once I sort of realized that she was right, I decided I was going to start to say yes to all the things that scared me, that made me nervous, that freaked me out, that made me think I'm going to look foolish doing it. Anything that took me out of my comfort zone, I was going to do if asked to do it.
She's saying this to you at a moment when you are at the top of your game. I mean, when your shows are doing well, Shondaland is up and running, it somehow didn't compute.
I know. For other people, I think it's interesting. Everybody sort of looked at me and thought, what are you talking about? I always say the lives of my characters had gotten unimaginably large. You know, everybody all over the world knows who those characters are. But my life had gotten, as large as those characters' lives had gotten, my life had gotten just as small. That's how it really began to feel.
So by small, what do you mean?
I'd really sort of always been a shy person. I'd always been an introverted person. And I think the concept or the experience of the explosion of those shows and the notoriety or the fame that came with it was very daunting for me. And you sort of curl in on yourself a little bit and your world becomes a little bit smaller and tighter. And I was not a person who was going to be out at Hollywood parties. I was not a person who was going to be doing, you know, living some, I don't know what I called, like, some glamorous life. And my time really was spent going to work or coming home and working really hard because I wanted to do a good job, and coming home and spending time with my family because that was what was important to me. And that was it.
How did you kind of take comfort, you know, like how did you, I guess, take care of yourself?
I wasn't. I mean, honestly, that's the thing that was really interesting that I discovered in this time, was that I hadn't been taking care of myself at all. I'd been taking care of everybody else. But, you're absolutely not taking care of yourself during this period of time.
One of the ways you talk about this is like your health and your relationship with food and trying to lose weight. What did you kind of consider the need to say yes there? Like, what did you want to change?
It was interesting because it really wasn't about weight so much as it was about the fact that I felt tired and exhausted. I didn't feel good. And so it really was about feeling healthy. I mean, I have two toddlers. I have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. I wanted to feel healthy for them. You want to be around for them. And the realization that I had stopped caring about that part of my life, about feeling healthy, about living in my body, was a little bit part of the idea of withdrawing from the world. And so sort of jumping into that was saying, I'm going to care and I'm going to give it some effort.
We all tell ourselves, I don't know, certain narratives, right, to kind of justify how we're living at any given time. And it's interesting how you identify yours. And I think one of them was something like, my body is a container for my brain.
Yes.
Which seems good at first, because basically you're saying, hey, it's me, my work, my brain.
Mm-hmm. It was my very feminist statement of don't just look at how a person looks. Your body is really just the thing that you carry your brain around in. And it sounds really good until you start to think that's absolutely not true. You are a whole person for a reason.
And what kind of changes did you make as a result? I'm reading here you lost upwards of 100 pounds in the first year alone.
I did. And really, it was about just realizing that it was work, that I was never going to enjoy it. It's never going to be fun to eat healthy. Like, I'm never going to enjoy eating healthy. I'm never going to enjoy exercising.
It's nice to hear someone say that.
Yeah, I'm never going to be that person. And I really always resented hearing people say, like, you know, you just learn to love it or it gets easier. It doesn't. It sucks. I'm always going to want to eat the fried chicken. That's never going to change. And sort of accepting that and accepting that it was going to be as much work as succeeding at my job or being a parent made it so much simpler to deal with.
It's difficult for anyone to talk about weight, let alone someone who works in Hollywood. I mean, was it hard to write about this?
You know, what was really interesting was that it was freeing in a really great way. I find it's a fascinating taboo in this town, and everybody's very careful about it, and nobody wants to talk about it, and yet there's 1,000 jokes about it. And for me, I just felt like I was going to jump right into it and have the conversation the way I would have the conversation about anything else. Because, I don't know, I've always found that if I'm thinking or feeling it, there's somebody else out there who's thinking and feeling it too. I mean, that's sort of how my writing has always been. And that honesty has been what's connected me to my audience. And I don't know, it would have felt like a lie to not be honest about it. It would have felt like I was trying to hide something if I didn't just talk about it in the same way I would talk about anything else.
Another area you write about is parenting. And you, as you mentioned, you have 3 daughters, I guess toddler to tween, right?
Yeah. I have a 13-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
And in the book, you do something striking, I think, for a celebrity, which is to admit that you have paid help taking care of them.
Yeah.
What's the deal with successful women, especially celebrities, like basically hiding that fact?
I think a lot of successful women, most successful women, don't talk about the fact that they have help because it feels shameful. I mean, we're all supposed to be doing this all ourselves. It's very clear in our culture that we all sort of shame one another for having help, which is crazy because we work. If you're working, how else are you doing it? You're not a magic person. You can't split yourself in two. You're not Hermione Granger with a time turner. You have to have somebody help you. And there's no shame in that. As a matter of fact, I think there's something wonderful about the fact that you are employing another woman, feminist work, to help you in this endeavor. Like, I think that's kind of great.
What kind of effect does it have on everyone else? You know, I mean, I'm sure you've read enough celebrity profiles where someone says, like, oh, no, I'm home cutting apple slices, like, and also doing these 50 million things you see me doing in public.
I always feel like that image, the idea that, you know, somebody's working and somehow managing to do all of the stuff at home, it makes the women who actually are having to do everything themselves or are struggling in the middle of the country, it makes them feel bad. It wouldn't make anybody's life easier to look at my life and go, she's got 3 kids and she's running 2 shows and she's producing 2 others and she's developing 7 shows and she hangs out with celebrities and her life is just fantastic and nobody helps her. That lie is so brutal for somebody. when you're living in the middle of the country and you're struggling to get your one kid to get into the bathtub one day, you know, I'm not successful at getting my kid into the bathtub all the time. So to make somebody feel bad about that feels really, really wrong.
So one aspect of this, I think, that applied to the year of yes idea was kind of finding that balance of spending time with your children, saying yes to them as well. In what ways were you saying no?
I don't know that I was saying no to my children consciously. I think that if you're a successful woman, if you're a working woman who really feels driven and, you know, you're leaning in and you really want to do well at your job, you're not spending the time at home that you'd want to, and you're not even conscious of it anymore. I was kind of a workaholic. I was somebody who spent a lot of time working, and I was getting really good at it, and I was really enjoying it. And the idea that I was prioritizing work over home was clear and obvious and happening, only I wasn't seeing it. And one day my daughter basically said to me, like, do you want to play? And I was on my way out the door, and I suddenly realized that I was going to miss so much stuff if I didn't just stop and actually play with my kids. And I started to prioritize playing with my kids, as make it as important as going to work.
And what's key here is it's not playing with them for 5 hours, right?
Yeah.
I mean, was like you had a different way of thinking of this.
Yeah, I decided that whenever they asked me if I wanted to play, I would say yes. My answer would always be yes. And the way I could do that is because, A, they only really ever want to play with you for about 15 minutes at a time. Like, they're not going to be that interested in me. I'm not Kermit the Frog. And because I'm not Kermit the Frog, they're not going to stay interested in me very long. So it made it very simple, because you'd play with them for a while and then they'd take off and they'd be thrilled and I would be 10 times more relaxed and happier and go off to the office in a much better place.
So much of what you're talking about didn't seem so much as saying yes, but like beating back judgment, right? Like judgment of yourself. Judgment from other people, other parents. I mean, is that part of this?
Honestly, I think it's really beating back all the judgments are coming from yourself. You know, it's all the stuff you tell yourself about yourself that you say you're wrong, you shouldn't be doing this. It's all the standards you think you're supposed to be living up to that aren't real.
And these are standards that your characters deal with and fight against constantly, right? If I think of Sandra Oh's character, Christina Yang, on Grey's Anatomy, you know, characters essentially make unorthodox decisions, maybe people would think, for women. And then basically they do have to deal with the consequences of whatever those decisions were.
Absolutely. Part of what's been great for me in getting to write these characters and getting to have these shows is getting to explore these issues with these women. I really wanted to have characters who were living these lives that we're all living, trying to do things not the conventional ways, because I know that we're all wanting to or attempting to, and what really happens when you do.
It also meant opening up your life, I think, in some ways to scrutiny. And in fact, you talk about how you almost got married and how that engagement fell apart. What happened?
That was a hard one to write. That was sort of coming to the realization or recognizing or being able to say out loud the concept that I don't want to get married, which is a real taboo in our society for some reason. Saying I don't want to get married or I don't want to have kids are two of the biggest taboos for women to admit in our culture. And it's fascinating to me how many women I know who don't want to have kids who sort of keep it under wraps. It's like their secret.
They're like friends, or I mean, how do you hear this discussion?
I have a friend who's got a theory that if she just waits everybody out, people will start to think she's infertile and then think it's too rude to ask.
Oh, my God. Well, people might not think it's too rude to ask, because people definitely still ask that question.
That's true. People do ask. But, you know, I just think that people feel you're unhappy. Like, it's their definition of happiness. Marriage and children is their definition of happiness. That's the fairy tale. And if you don't have those things, how can you possibly be happy?
And you're also trying to, I guess, walk the line of not insulting people who do value those things.
Well, and I don't think it has anything to do with them. That's what I think is fascinating, is that my decision to not want to get married has nothing to do with the fact that it makes somebody else happy. My parents have been married forever. They are the most beautiful, happy, most in love couple I've ever seen in my entire life. They make me believe in true love. That doesn't mean that I belittle their marriage by not wanting to get married.
There's also that weird pressure for women, I think, in Hollywood or any other place, where it's like, where's your man? right? Like, I think you've been public about adopting your first two daughters and using mm-hmm. a surrogate for your last. And was there also this sense of, like, why is she doing this by herself?
Oh, definitely. I think those questions always get asked. What I found fascinating for me was I have never gotten so much approval and accolades and warmth and congratulations as when I had a guy on my arm that people thought I was going to marry. It was amazing. I mean, nobody congratulated me that hard when I had my three children. Nobody congratulated me that hard when I won a Golden Globe or a Peabody or my 14 NAACP Image Awards. But when I had a guy on my arm that people thought I was going to marry, people lost their minds like Oprah was giving away cards. It was unbelievable.
You've arrived, right? Like, all that other stuff was just preamble.
I was fascinated by it because I thought, like, I'm not Dr. Frankenstein. I didn't make this guy. He just is there. Like, everything else I actually had something to do with. I just thought it was a little bit creepy.
I feel like you've spent much of your career trying not to talk about these things. And it's something that was always very admirable, right? Like, that, like, I always thought, oh, Shonda Rhimes, she's not going to sit around and talk about, like, the kids and whether there's a man or not. And did you have to, like, overcome that yourself? Like, this sense of, like, I don't want to go there.
You know what was interesting? For a time, it might have felt like it was admirable. And I think I reached a point where, you know, I spent a lot of time speaking, you know, through my characters, and I still do. For a while, my characters were simply just speaking for me. But I think there was a time when I kind of realized that it wasn't even about that. It was about the fact that somehow I didn't think that I had anything to say for myself, which is a really odd feeling considering how prolific I am in terms of having to, you know, turn out scripts every day.
Yeah.
And how many words are coming out. But to feel like personally I didn't have anything to say for myself felt very sad. And that anything I had to say wasn't worth anybody hearing also felt sad. And so getting, you know, writing it down was this discovery of feeling like, oh, this is what it is. And I didn't write it as if I thought anybody was going to read it. I kind of felt panicked after I turned the book in and they said, we're going to press. And I thought, what?
You thought it was a writing exercise maybe?
I just kind of thought, you know, maybe it would just be, I don't know what I thought. It was funny because I really turned it in. They said, we're going to press. I'd seen the galleys and everything. But when they actually went to, like, we're going to an actual book, I had a flat out panic attack of, this is going to be real and out there and people are actually going to read it. What have I done?
At the same time, as I'm going through the book, it felt recognizably like you're writing. Like, there are scenes where it felt blocked. People were saying lines. It actually had the feel of a script.
Oh, interesting.
Like the Thanksgiving scene where you talk about your sister challenging you. I could see them cutting the vegetables. I could picture your whole family in the kitchen. Did that make it kind of easier to write, to think of it as like writing the story finally of you?
I didn't think of it that way. I tried to think of it more as a conversation. I tried to think of it as if I was sitting with somebody telling them the story of what happened, how would I tell it? You know, because when I sat and I tried to think of it as like a deep and esoteric, like telling of my emotional soul, I couldn't get a single word on the page. But when I thought, like, what do I tell my girlfriends when I'm telling this story? It was very simple to get out. And that made it feel more intimate almost.
We mentioned one of your characters earlier, Christina Yang, and you've talked about how you speak through your characters. Like when I was reading the book, there were moments where I thought, oh yeah, like that's Addison from Private Practice.
Oh, that's
interesting. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, this is Naomi, how she feels about a thing. That character talking about food. I'm a big fan of the TV shows, and I think both like Scandal and Peter Norwalk's How to Get Away with Murder have really strident kind of characters. And I didn't know if we're seeing the evolution of Shonda through these people.
I think that that's really interesting, and I think that there's a truth to that. I mean, there's a reason that Meredith Grey was an intern starting out on her first day of work in a job that she had no idea what she was doing. Because my first day of work in television, I had no idea what I was doing, and that was Grey's Anatomy. And there's a reason that Olivia Pope is, you know, a boss who runs a whole bunch of people's lives and doesn't really have anybody to talk to on the level of like a coworker or a peer. Everybody works for her and she takes care of everybody. There's a difference between being a leader and then being the newbie. And so you've grown in that sense when you've grown for 12 years. So yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Looking forward, is there any character you can tell us about, a new character on the horizon that you feel some kinship to?
A new character. There are no new characters. I'm purposely, definitely, defiantly making myself not have any new characters right now.
Really? I feel like Twitter is going to explode somehow. Like, this is a spoiler. No new friends, as Drake would say.
I'm having a really good time. Grey's is in this amazing place of resurgence, and Meredith Grey is having this, I don't know, this special thing happen to her where, as a widow, she's become a really interesting character. I've been writing this novel for 12 years, and I want to see where it goes. And that's really special for me. And Olivia Pope is evolving in a way that I had never dreamed, and I cannot wait to see what happens. And so I'm very invested in those things right now. And I'm not ready to focus on anything else at the moment, other than the things I'm producing with other writers.
And in the meantime, can I ask, Shonda Rhimes, are you happy now?
I'm very happy. It's very interesting. I pretty much wake up every day happy and go to bed every day happy.
Well, Shonda Rhimes, thank you so much for saying yes to us.
Thank you.